You are listening to a digitally remastered class of HaRav Yochanan Zweig, Rosh HaYeshiva of the Talmudic University of Florida. This class is from the Robert L. and Rhoda Lipton Foundation Audio Library. For more information, please call 305-534-7050, or you can visit our website at www.talmudicu.edu.
Hashem says to Moshe, however, the tribe of Levi, you should not count together with the rest of the Jewish people. Sentence 50. And you should count Levi and put them in charge of the Mishkan and all its vessels, everything that's an appurtenance to the Mishkan. Hey, they'll carry the Mishkan and all its vessels, and they will serve it. And they will live around the Mishkan. So Levi is not counted together with the Jews. Even the cumulative number of the Jewish people does not include the tribe of Levi. You have the cumulative number of the Jewish people, each tribe, and then a cumulative number. And then the tribe of Levi is counted separately and give a cumulative number of that tribe, but that it's not, there's no cumulative number of Jews including Levi. The Baal HaTurim makes a very interesting observation here, which is, I think this whole thing for all of us that are involved in Jewish communal affairs, and I think even to some extent as an employer, probably some extent even as a parent, I think has a huge amount of relevance, but certainly in communal affairs. Levi is counted separately, and Levi is put in charge of the tabernacle. Running it, serving it, carrying it when it moves from place to place. He says the word in sentence 50, Hafkade, only appears twice in the entire scriptures. And he says that the other place it appears, it says like this, Hafkade Olav Rosha. You should appoint a wicked person. Here we're talking about the appointment of the Levian, and there we're talking about appoint a wicked person. And he brings a statement from the Talmud that says as follows, the Medrash that says, Ein Odom Nasa Shoter Milmata, a person is not put as a shoter, a judge, a sheriff, an official down here. Elim came Nasa Rosha Lamala. Until he has already been declared wicked above. Means anybody in a position of authority is not put into that position until he's first declared wicked. So that itself needs some huge explanation. What does that mean? That's everything you say about the president of the shul is true. Everything you say about the Gaboyim is true. Everything you say about the president of school is true. Everything you say about maybe the rabbi is true. The board of directors, it's all true. It's an unbelievable statement. What I find even more problematic is, even if it were true, one would have to think that Levi is the exception to that, because Levium, they were the holiest of all our tribes. They are the ones that were entrusted to the position of Yoram Mishpatech Yaakov Sarosli Israel. They're our rabbis, our teachers, our leaders, and to say on them that they are wicked is mind-boggling. So in general, the statement of the Talmud needs to be understood, and secondly, the application to Levi needs to be understood. And this called to mind another very interesting statement in the Talmud that also needs some clarification.
Says in Ksuvos on 1:5b,
Gemara says like this. Abai said the following statement: a rabbi who is beloved by his community, by people in his city, is not because he's good. It's only because he does not give them criticism regarding spiritual matters. that. So this is what the Talmud is saying. If a rabbi is beloved by his community, it means he's not doing his job. So then we have a very serious question also, that if in fact he is not, people don't like him, he can't be effective either. So it's like they call that a catch-22 situation. If they like you, you're not doing your job. If they don't like you, you can't do your job. So how do we understand this? What is the Talmud telling us? So I was thinking of, all right, so we're trying to understand the general Talmudic dictum of only appoint, only wicked people get appointed to positions of authority. Secondly, how does that apply to Levi? And thirdly, how does the rabbi actually function? If he's liked, he's not doing his job. If he's not liked, he can't do his job. So what does the Talmud actually say? I'd like to begin to analyze what is the wickedness of Levi, and how can we even think that Levi should be wicked? Where do we see any indication of wickedness by Levi? When the Jewish people did the golden calf, Levi did not participate. When they did the spies, Levi did not participate. And yet we have a very interesting phenomenon here. What was God's initial reaction at the golden calf? What did God want to do to the Jewish people? Destroy them and leave over who? Only Moshe Rabbeinu, nobody else. That was his initial reaction, both at the sin of the spies and to Levi. Therefore, Levi has to have some culpability. They didn't do the sin of the golden calf. How can therefore they be held, they're going to be destroyed? They did not do the sin of the golden calf. So how could God have even had an initial, and not only that, it was only with great supplication of Moshe Rabbeinu. Maybe a few weeks we'll discuss what exactly his argument was, but if God said, I want to destroy everybody, it wasn't just in the heat of the moment of anger. He said, well, they all deserve to die. Levi were holy people. Why did they deserve to die? Has to be that in a group dynamics, a people that are very passionate about a position ought to have the ability to influence other people. Let's sit down and talk about let's just think about the golden calf for a second. There's 600,000 Jews, adults, who are doing the golden calf. The actual ones that actually did the golden calf was not a huge number of Jews. The ones that did intentionally, the Torah gives us a number, 3,000. Those that were not, with warning, those that were not so hostile, we don't know what the number was. But it wasn't a serious amount because there weren't many people that were killed. The rest were bystanders, enjoying it, going with the flow. If you have a passionate group of 7,000 people, this is ridiculous, guys. What are we doing over here? That's easy. There's not more than 7,000 people on the other side of the ones who are setting the pace. It means Levi was not vociferous enough and strong enough to be able to, and didn't voice a strong enough opposition. Let's take an example. There was one person who got up and made a public protest. Who's that? Chur. He made a public, now it's true he was killed, but we're not going to say he was insane. He may as well just jumped off a roof. He actually thought, and sometimes one person, I've been in many board of directors meetings, the board's going one way, and one guy is able to clarify a position and to really explain it lucidly, the whole group changes. Okay, this was a larger group. There's 20,000 people, but demagogues, orators, powerful people who can deliver a message sometimes can change. That's what he thought. He wasn't able to do it. Right? They killed him, but he thought it was possible. But what about if he would have had 7,000 passionate people with him? It would have been easily be able to be accomplished. That means Levi was not able to do it from within the group. Why not? So we're wondering, how come they couldn't do it? They're righteous people. How come Levi couldn't do it? I realized a very fascinating thing about Levi, and I think this is a huge message in group dynamics. Levi did not share the same experiences as the Jewish people. The Jewish people are coming out of a few hundred years of slavery in Egypt. They all went through slavery. They were all oppressed, all except for the tribe of Levi. In fact, the Ramban says in this week's Parsha, he's really bothered by the 600,000 Jews, divide the 12 tribes, about 50,000, on average, 50,000. Levi, from the age of, that's from the age of 20 up, Levi from the age of born all the way up only has 22,000. So there's very few Levim in relation to the other Jews. From the age of 20 up, you have about 6,000-7,000 Levis. That's it. The others are averaging 50. Levi has one-seventh of the average of the other tribes. So the Ramban is bothered with this question. He says, I'll tell you why, he says. The Torah told us that the more Pharaoh oppressed the people, the more they multiplied. Levi were not oppressed. And if they were not oppressed, they didn't have a special blessing for multiplication. They had a more natural progression, population increase. But the population explosion, the real proliferation, was a miraculous thing from God. That didn't apply to Levi.
Why was Levi not oppressed?
Because they didn't work. Pharaoh freed Levi. So then I realized, if you have a group, and you have one group that has not suffered with the rest of the last 100 years, that's already, you don't feel that they have the same perspective as you. You don't feel they're part of you. You know, today in group dynamics also, you have a group, and there's a group of Latins in the shul. They're not going to affect the other people. And if it's a different kind of group, in a Latin shul, there's a group of Ashkenazi, even a group of Ashkenazim among a group of Sephardim. They're like an out group, even though if they have 10% of the vote, and you're given the vote, but they're not going to be able to change. In order for people to affect each other, they have to have the same perspective, and people have to feel they identify with them. Otherwise, they're sharing different experiences, they have different objectives, they don't really understand who I am. And therefore, Levi was very hard for them to affect. Yes, they should have done whatever, should have done this and this, and had they really made some Herculean effort, maybe it would have been possible. But normal group dynamics, I don't do this, and it's the wrong thing to do. And take an example from me, even without saying that, you can't identify with somebody that you consider to be different than you. And they've had a huge difference of the last 100 years. We're suffering, and they're not suffering. In fact, it's not impossible. There's even a lot of resentment to Levi. It's hard to know. How did they feel? Not that it was Levi doing anything. Pharaoh created that reality. I was wondering if that was like a brilliant strategy from Pharaoh also. Knowing that Levi, this is the scholar class, the smartest thing he could have done was to make them an object of different so that they would not be able to affect everybody. I don't know if we have to attribute that kind of political genius to Pharaoh. But I mean, that's right. Pharaoh made the choice. He's going to keep them as a priestly caste, and therefore he's not going to oppress them. But in fact, what he therefore created was that Levi lost their influence on the people because they're not the same. They're differences. They're the rabbis. There's no doubt that rabbis can't influence anybody as much as your colleagues, your comrades, the balabatim can influence each other much more than a rabbi can influence. He's doing his job. You know. What else should the rabbi say? And he's probably saying the right thing too, but he doesn't understand me. He doesn't understand me and somebody who works all week. He doesn't understand what kind of days I have to deal with. Tell me to come learn every night. It doesn't work. It's right for the rabbi. He's been visiting the sick. He's done this. He doesn't have the same kind of pressures that I have. He doesn't understand. Some of your friends start learning. Hey, that's a different story. Yeah, maybe I have time to learn too. Maybe I have time to come to shul more often. We don't identify with authority figures. And to some extent, on the practicality here, Levi was isolated. And since Levi was isolated, they didn't have the same ability to affect. Again, they should have, and therefore the Almighty punished them. They should have been punished. They should have, all of them, everybody would have been destroyed, because we have responsibility to each other. Horrendous behavior is going on. We all are responsible to affect each other in a positive way. And they didn't do that. So what does the Almighty do? He puts Levi on top of us. See, until now, Levi was to some extent equal to us. We didn't identify with them. They couldn't deliver. He made them the rabbis. He made them the clergy. Levi is the clergy. So first of all, now we understand a fascinating thing that the Medrash is saying. The Medrash is saying is that if one has the ability to affect from within, and the only way, and all of a sudden God points him, or community points him, to affect from without, that means he did something wrong. Because if you did something right, you wouldn't have had to have been imposed from outside. You could have done that from inside much even more effectively. Number one. Number two, when you put a person over you, and this we'll see from the Rambam, when you put a person over you, there's a natural resentment, there's a jealousy. It's the Rambam's language. When a person's appointed on top of you, there's a jealousy. I would think the way to prove that is the Torah tells us, V'yohavta l'reacha kamocha, your friend, you should love like yourself. Your brother, lo tisna achicha dovavecha, don't hate your brother. Friends, yeah. When it really gets close, you know, they're really into each other, you know, it's like a shalom bias, you know. Don't hate your wife, right? Nasi, an authority figure, don't curse. As the Torah then said, love him. Don't curse him. Because the truth is, the Rambam says, there's a huge resentment that somebody be put on top of you. So now we understand the Medrash. The Medrash is that to put a person over you, he must have done something wrong. And the answer is true. If he was part of a group and he could have actually influenced you without that, once you put him over you, yes, you've taken away, he's less influential. He's less influential. So why not let him stay where he is? Because staying where he is, he wasn't doing what he could have done. So you don't put a person over somebody till you already see that he can't do it from within, which is a better way to do it. It's a much better way to do it from within than being from without. Therefore, it applies to Levi also. That's exactly what Levi was not able to influence the people from within, a group of 7,000 strong Levim, or maybe 20,000 Levim who could have delivered a message. They didn't deliver the message, therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu separated and put them on top. So what's the solution to this? You know, we all undertake to be the insanity of being a president of a school, a president. What is the solution to this? What is the solution to this? You know, first of all, as a board of directors member, sometimes you actually have some effect. As you become president, you get less effect. Because even a board is, you know, you're one of many, you're comrades, you're equal. All of a sudden, you become president, you're going to have less effect. You're going to be getting along with people less. So what, there's no solution? Don't do it? I mean, so what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to refuse? So I found a Mishnah that I think would be very helpful. I think I'll have it explained. Listen to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, love work, the Sone es Rabbonus. This is in the first chapter of Avos 11. You should like to do work and hate being an authority figure. Sone es Rabbonus. You should hate to be an authority figure. Comes along the Rambam on that mission and says, when a person is appointed, he starts like this, when somebody wants to be an authority figure, he'll have many tests and bad things will happen because his people will be jealous of him. And they'll argue with him and fight with him and try and undermine his authority. That's a fact. And then he brings the Talmudic, the dictum I just said, that I've forgotten that he brings. He says, when a person is appointed a leader on a group down here, he must have first been declared wicked upstairs. Which he means, becoming a president of a place is really, you're in for a fight. People that were formerly your friends respected you. By the way, he doesn't, The Mishnah used the word Rabbonus, which doesn't only mean being a rabbi, it means authority figure. And the Rambam changes the word to Parnas, which means the lay leader, the lay president, not even the rabbi. So we're not talking about clergy, we're talking about lay leadership too. As soon as you become that, people are going to hate you. People, and therefore you should keep away from it. I was thinking maybe there's a solution in the Mishnah also. As the Mishnah is saying that you should not, you should hate the rabbinate, because the hate authority, the person in authority, should not want to take authority, because if he takes authority, people will be jealous, there's going to be fights, they're going to try and discredit him. But I think the answer, with the way the Rambam is reading the Mishnah, it doesn't mean you should hate it and therefore not do it. What it means is you should take it, but always with the feeling that you can't stand it, can't stand it. Which means then I think people are not upset with you. What people don't like is when an authority figure, he enjoys being over you. He likes the honor, he likes being able to tell what to do, he likes being able to give out appointments, he likes being the gabbai. He likes being able to say who doesn't get honor, who does get honor. He likes disciplining. What the Rambam, I think, or what the Mishnah is saying is, sonas harabonis doesn't mean don't take the position. It means when you take the position, you should maintain a state of mind that this is something you don't want to do. You don't want to have to choose who should get honor. You don't want to have to say you're not worthy of this. You don't want to have to discipline anybody. And if that remains your state of mind, then the people under you understand this is not something you're doing because you enjoy. It's not something you're doing because you feel more worthy. It's not something you feel over anybody. It's a job that has to be done. I can't stand doing it, but it has to be done. Because what, three people are going to run up to daven for the omer? That's what's going to happen. Three people. You won't even have a minion in the shul. Three people running for the omer. Who's your side? Who gets the aliyah? Which teacher do we fire? So then there's two teachers in the classroom. Of course decisions have to be made, and there has to be a position of authority. But the person in the position has the clear message, this is not something to have any joy, and actually you shouldn't have any joy. And to whatever extent, I'm not looking for honor, but it has to come across clear, this is a distasteful job to you. If you give over the message it's distasteful, then I think it is a way to avoid the jealousy. The jealousy is if the person takes a job as a soror, I'm over you. I'm now in charge of you. I am over you. You got, which you know, even to some extent, you know, the rabbi sits up high, the president sits up high. In my opinion, if you have to get up to talk or for the pulpit to give the messages, no way, get up. But there's no reason to do that. You don't reason to do that. You can deliver the message. You have to give the message. Anything has to do with honor. I don't want. I'm doing this job because it has to be done. And if that's really your mindset. And by the way, it's a hard mindset to have, because after all the abuse you get, you feel you're entitled to a little bit of reward also. I mean, in this job, you got to have some compensation for the abuse. But the truth of the matter is, if that's your attitude, there won't be any abuse. I think that's not only a helpful message in leadership, it's also a very helpful message in employer-employee relationships, the boss. You know, I have to make some decisions, you know, that affect you. You know, when I keep open, what our hours are, whatever it is. It's not because I own you that I'm doing this. It has to be done. Or certainly a father in a home who is usually the discipline, you know, if the mother even sets it up, wait till daddy comes home. You know, that's already, you know, that's supposed to terrorize the kid. All of a sudden you open the door and Mr. Terror has walked in. Even there, the child is petrified. There has to be. This is not something I want to do. And if you really don't want, and you're not really angry and upset and furious personally, and it really comes across you don't want, the child gets a much better message, and there's much less resentment. You know, that's the basis of a whole parnasa, a whole profession, are issues with our parents. One of the issues is they told us what to. Why should you? I said so. That's why you have to do it. The more you give that message, the more it's because I said so, the more resentment there's going to be. The message always has to be, whatever I'm telling you, it's just because I have to do. And to the extent that I have to do something, I think At some point, an intelligent person will realize, listen, we can't have anarchy here. Somebody has to make a decision. Who gets this and who does this and where we go? There has to be a decisional process. But it shouldn't be any more than, since this was the decision, and maybe I was put there to make those decisions, but it's not about me. It's not about I have a position, I have a title, I'm in charge. It's about somebody has to. I am so Nasser Abonis, I can't stand this position. I was thinking maybe now we explain the Talmud also. If let's say that is your posture, you're on top of somebody and your posture is, you know, I can't stand doing this. I have to do it. I'm doing it, and everything you do gives them the feeling that you're the same as them. You don't sit on it there. Your name doesn't appear in big letters on the this. Whatever it is, and they really get that message. Or the rabbi. The rabbi is another example, right? He's also an authority figure. You know, if he gives the message that I have to give mussar, I have to get up there. I mean, that's what you hired me for. You hired me to tell you how to improve. Because I'm good and you're not good. This is the job. You hired me for this. This I'm just doing because this is what, when you pay me money, this is what you're telling, this is what you're paying me for. As much as you don't want to listen to it, I don't want to do it, but I have to do it. I don't think when you get criticism from anybody like that, I don't think you love them. I don't think you can love anybody who's giving you criticism. But you're not going to hate them either. You can't love them, but you're not going to hate them. In other words, when you feel someone's doing something that has to be done, but what he has to be done is distasteful to you, you're not going to love the person. What he's doing is criticizing you. Let me explain that a little bit better. A doctor can do something very distasteful. He opens up your back, he opens up your heart, and opens up your ears and throat, and it was painful, this and this. At the end of the day, doc, how can I repay you? I love you. Here's $100,000 to your favorite charity. That's not an impossible time. Most of the Miami Heart was, even Sinai, was funded that way. For all this pain. Because over there, when a doctor does that, he made you better too, in your mind. He made you better. When you criticize a person, you never make them better. But any criticism to a person is an opportunity for him to make himself better. Criticism never made anybody better. Criticism gave somebody the ability that he understood what his problem is to straighten himself out. But ultimately, he has to make himself better. So all you did was give him pain. All you, the person giving criticized, you know, the doctor gave pain and a cure. A person that criticized gives pain, which allows you to make a choice of a cure. But what he's doing for you is really very painful. The person criticizes him, and he's not doing any more than that. Then, after that, you need an enormous amount of work. Whatever your problem is, now you know your problem. That's the beginning of the amount of hard work and counseling, whatever you need. You need a huge amount of effort and discipline and consistency afterwards to use the pain. You're never going to love a person like that. A doctor you can love because he gave you pain, but in the end he gave you pleasure that outweighed pain. He gave you pain and pleasure. Person criticized never gives you pleasure. He only gives you pain, which you can then convert the pleasure by a great deal of hard work. So you'll never love him. It's impossible to love him. But you won't hate him either. Because you understood he just had to do it. He did it because he had to do it, not because he was lording over you. And, you know, most time when we criticize people, they're getting pain and we're getting a lot of pleasure out of it. You usually criticize the people that, honey, you know, it's not about, it doesn't bother me, but, you know, that's the first lie. It's the whole idea of criticism is usually the payback for some injury. You don't want to couch it as a payback, so you couch it as criticism. It's in your interest. It's never, rarely. It's usually in the giving pleasure to the person that is, you know. There's a Talmudic dictum: mitzvahs lav lehenesnim. You're not supposed to get pleasure from mitzvahs. I think that's true by every mitzvah except the mitzvah of criticism. You know, most people don't get any mitzvahs. Go build a sukkah, sit in the sukkah, eat matzah. But I'll tell you one mitzvah most people get a lot of pleasure from: the mitzvah of criticism. I'm being facetious, but that's the fact. If you feel that different, you're angry at the person, you're upset, you're getting pain, he's enjoying your pain. Literally, that's what the way you feel. And therefore, you hate a person that's criticizing you. However, if he gives over the message and it's clear that he's not doing it because he enjoys it, he's only doing it because he has to do it, and he really wishes he didn't have to do it, and he's as so as a rabbonis, he hates being in this position that he has to do it, then you're never going to love him because he's giving you pain. But you're not going to hate him either. You're not going to hate it. You know he has no enjoyment. It's not about anything him. It's only about to help you. You're not going to hate him. That's what the Talmud is saying. A rabbi who's loved by his community is not criticism. There's no such thing as criticism. You can't love a person that gives you criticism. You can't love him because at the end of the day, he didn't help you. He gave you a means that if you'll use tremendous effort to overcome your problem, so you're not going to love him. So our question was, so therefore what? You can't stand him. Well, if you can't stand him, then he can't do his job either. No, no. There's an in-between. You don't love him because it hurt. You don't hate him because you understand that was his job and he got... just did it out of a feeling of this, he must do this, and he hated doing it when he did it. Therefore, you don't love him and you don't hate him. He can do his job and you can respect him for it. That's the right posture for a rabbi. I say that's the right posture for any authority figure. You're not going to be loved, but if you really make a real effort not to have any pleasure from what you're putting people down or ordering people around, no pleasure from that, which I've actually seen people have employees physically take them by their hands and push them to do something that they wanted them to do. Not on the job. They invited them to somebody made a simcha, and he invited his employees there. And he wanted, like, now it's time to start eating. He started taking them. I said, time to eat. He started taking them, shoving them to the wash list. You know, you understand the mitzvah of tilas yadayim. He thinks about and the abuse of another human being. That's not a mitzvah at all. I mean, it's horrendous behavior. But that's not there. You got a feeling this is an employer who likes being owning people. I mean, you're not allowed to treat a slave like that. Forget about an employee. You're not allowed to treat a slave like that. Authority, and it's the same in the house. You know, sometimes the kids aren't going to love you. Fortunately, most of us want to be loved, especially in America. Want to be loved? Better not say any. Don't criticize the kids. Give them more money. You want to be loved. No discipline. No. A parent doesn't have to be loved. Doesn't have to be loved for some of the things they do. Child's not going to love you, but you have to be prepared. I won't want to be loved. But I do need to be able to do to make the child better, but you have to do it in a position. I'm not angry now because you do something to me. I'm doing it because it has to be done. I wish I didn't have to be the disciplinarian. If that's the message, then you can get the job done without creating hostility. And that's a huge accomplishment, without creating hostility. There's rarely, I mean, you know, very often some of the presidents of institutions come to talk to me, and always the conversation always begins like this. You know, now from within, I see how much has to be done. I think I should probably stay another year, but my wife doesn't want me to. Because the truth of the matter is, any position of authority, you've gotten a huge amount of abuse, and your wife has gotten abused, and people tell her how nasty her husband is, and how insensitive, and how much he doesn't care. So it requires an enormous amount of work just not to be hated. Because the starting point is, when a person is on top of you, there's a resentment. Don't curse him. That's what the Torah mandates. Don't curse him. What you have to do is give a person a clear, and it has to be true in your heart, you really don't want this position. You're only doing this because it has to be done. The place will collapse. Organizations collapse without good leadership. And to do everything to minimize the sense of being over, in terms of where you sit and your name on the station. There's a lot of things that can be done. A lot of things that can be done to minimize that. But if you don't minimize that, you are going to suffer, and then you're not going to really be able to do the job, because if people can't stand you, it gets a trifle better, and then you paid a huge cost to that. And your family pays the cost. Your wife pays the cost to that. All right, I thought that's what the Torah is telling us. I think it's a very, very... So again, just going to start. The Torah tells us again that a position of authority, even on Levi, is only God puts a wicked person there, in that position. And that we explain because a better way to do anything is from within the group. That's always the most effective way to do from within. Once you're put on top of people, that's not... And the only reason God puts you on top, because you failed from being within, so God had to put, you had to be put on top. But the healthiest way would be to do it. Once you're on top, then we got the problem that the Talmud tells us being on top itself creates horrendous problems. Because people resent that. Don't curse them, the Torah tells us. So how can that be accomplished? Saying the only way to accomplish it is, I think what the Mishnah is saying, sonas rabbonus. Make sure if you are on top, it's only not because you enjoy the authority, you want the power, it's because it has to be done. I can't stand what I'm doing. You know, parents say this, but the children don't, and very often it's not even true when we say it. You slap your child, well, you're not allowed to do that anymore, but you know, when we grew up, our parents defrustrated us by slapping us occasionally. It hurts me more than it hurts you. That would be, to the extent that it was actually true, that's a very wonderful message. That's a wonder. I can't stand doing this, son. I can't stand doing this. You need to be straightened out. I can't stand doing this. That's what our parents were telling us. And if it was true, it was a good message. You didn't love anybody that slapped you for that particular act, but you didn't hate him all the time. If you knew, if you felt that it really hurt him to do it. You think he enjoyed doing it, now he got his revenge against you. Then you actually got angry, and then it became a war, and you became hostile towards them too. But if you really delivered the message, I can't stand disciplining you. I can't stand saying you can't daven for the yomim. I can't stand saying that you can't have that position. I can't stand telling you to clean up your act and criticizing you. If I can't stand it, but I have to do it. If you really do that, then he will not hate it, won't resent it, won't love you, but he won't hate it either.
If the leader is doing something that has to be done, doesn't want to do it, as you said, how is he wicked?
No, what I'm saying is the position is that God put you in this position was not for this, was for some wickedness before, because there's a better way that this should be done. If you really could be an influential person, you don't have to be on top of people, you could be within the group, and that's much more influential. So therefore there was something in your past that you didn't do what you could have done. When you remember the shul, you could have done. And since you didn't do then, and it needs to be done, God puts you. But if it's now the position is bad, so what? Therefore God's punishing you by doing it? The answer is, there's a way to do it that it's not going to do worse, and that is if you really don't want the position, then you'll be able to do it effectively, and it will not make things worse for you. But up front, if you would have done it earlier, if you would have been able, I think a school is a good thing too. If you would have, you know, as a balabas, say, listen guys, this year we're all given, you know, we can afford it, we had all great years, our houses are up, we're given each, I'm just a member of the board, or just a member of the community, we have to all give $25,000. That's a lot more effective. But now as the president, now you're in charge of the budget, I want everybody to make a $25,000 donation. That's a lot less effective when you're in charge of the budget as when you're not in charge. Guys, we can do it. And if somebody, you know, when you have somebody in a group pushing something that's not different than you, doesn't have a different perspective, doesn't have any more responsibility for the budget than you have, then that's a much more effective message. If the message would have been done effectively originally, you probably wouldn't have to become president. You know what? If you would have done that, everybody would have liked you too. You lifted them up. When you become the president, even when you give that message, you're pressuring them, you're putting them down, you're making them feel guilty. It's always more effective to deliver a message from within the group. And saying that Levi probably could hardly do it because their life experiences were different. For 100 years, they weren't part. But they're such great righteous people that God is still holding them responsible there also. There's some level that they could have perhaps done something. It would have almost been impossible because no, even within the group, no one really felt they were really part of the group because they hadn't suffered like the rest of us. But most of us start off as being part of a group, and the ills of the shul, the ills of the school, as part of the group. And by the way, the truth of the matter is, till you really had the responsibility, you didn't think about it enough. That's the honest truth. You weren't concerned about the budget of the shul, the budget of the school, until you really have some responsibility for the budget, either as a board of directors member or as a president, an officer in the school. You really weren't concerned. That was wrong. You should have been just as concerned. Your kids go to school. It's a community institution. Maybe you dive in there. You should do something. You should have done. And by the way, it would have been effective that way. Much more effective. Right? Everybody resents when a guy on top of them is telling them what to do. And besides, it's more than here. It's the guy who it's in his interest because I took responsibility for the budget. If you don't give, then he has to either give more or work harder. If you do something when you don't have the, when you're not separate and you're like everybody else and have to share the same perspective, that will be inspiring to everybody. Just like the rabbi can't give a message to learn as effective as your comrades who are learning can, a president can't give a message to give money as effective as the other people, as the members in the shul. He can't. Because he has an agenda. He has a responsibility. He has a different perspective. Us, we're part of the group. Roger.
It's interesting that what you say about the leadership is true, whether the person is appointed, whether they're hereditary, or if they're elected. And that's what's so strange. I mean, if people elect somebody to a position, why should they then resent what they did?
Well, you know, in the United States, it never exempt it. Presidents are always, you know, beloved. And, right? Yeah, the same reason, because you know what? They're enjoying it. They're taking, you know, they're spending $5,000 for a haircut and making the plane wait on the tarmac for an hour and holding up the traffic in the airport. And you know, there might be a little bit of taking perks, senators. It's not the money. It means they're enjoying it. Once they're enjoying it, I don't want you to be on top of it. If you're not enjoying it, and it really is a service, and you're doing it because you have to do it, I think we can handle it. But once you really look like you like being on top of me, even if I put you there, I didn't put you to enjoy being on top of me. I put you to function. I didn't put you to enjoy it and tend to want more covered.
I think a wonderful example from the American Revolutionary War. New book 1776 by McCulloch, they're talking about Washington as a very imperial sort of a guy. One of his generals, you know, from Massachusetts, I think his name was Ward. I mean, these were all volunteers, the soldiers who were volunteers, the generals who were volunteers. It wasn't the country. This general dresses like the soldiers. He's riding on his horse along the battle lines, and he stops. There's a big rocket board. So he turns to his soldier down there and he says, "Move the rocket and put it on the wall." The soldier looks up and says, "I'm a corporal." So the general gets off the horse and moves the rock. He was a very effective general.
I guess he learned the lesson when the guy said, "I'm a corporal." He should have started moving, and then the corporal would have joined him. But he learned his lesson quickly. You can't give orders. You gotta just do a job. Hey, Brian, great job.